Welcome to the Rockin' Coaster Podcast, presented by First Paw Media. Whether your favorite is a Giga, a Steel Dive, or old Woody roller coasters are your thing, or you're a fan of classic rock, hard rock, or grunge, we talk about it here. Each summer, Robert and Michelle Forto travel the country in search of the best roller coasters and music festivals. Sit back and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert.
And Michelle.
And we are the Rockin' Coasters Podcast. And today we're talking about day five of our Rockin' Coasters tour across America. We're currently in Dallas, Texas for Podcast Movement. This is our first full day in Dallas. We're at the Sheraton Hotel, huge hotel, two towers, a bunch of restaurants, a couple of clubs, and a very cool conference center that they are setting up as we speak. And if you are a podcast nerd, you'd love to see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Michelle, before we jump into today's activities, how are you feeling about Dallas?
You know, surprisingly, it seems a little bit dead. It could be because of the storms that have been coming through over the last few days. But today was the first day that we were in downtown Dallas, and it was Monday, work day, and it was not very busy at all.
No, I think they had a quote-unquote day off from work. As you said, record-breaking storms here. It's rained more in the last couple of days than it has in decades, and they really, really had a bunch of rain, so much so that a lot of the buildings that we've been in were not prepared for this. You see roof leaks, even in a big hotel like this, lots of roof leaks, lots of cleanup. It looks like almost like a hurricane, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. So that's the kind of weather that they are used to getting, a quick in and out kind of a rainstorm. But this one was definitely bringing down buckets of water, not just a quick in and out of a few inches or so. This was a significant amount of rain in a short period of time. It, you know, we're used to that monsoon season, if you will, that we get up in Alaska, usually starts for us in the month of July. For us, even this year, it's a little bit late, but we'll typically get buckets of rain during storms in Alaska at this time of year. So we didn't seem to be too fazed by it, but we are weathered travelers, aren't we?
Speaking of fazed by it, we both woke up this morning to the National Weather Service alert, emergency alert alarm that said, do not venture out to travel unless it's an emergency or you're trying to escape a flash flood. But we heeded no warning.
So, yeah, we didn't listen to the warnings whatsoever.
Nope.
And we went to brunch and we went shopping and a couple of other places that we decided to venture out to.
Let's talk about brunch. We headed about a mile or so from the hotel to Ellen's, and their tagline is, it's brunch o'clock somewhere. And it's a place that we found online yesterday, definitely worth the trip. I had something that I am not used to having.
No. You got to preface that better. You had something that in 22 years of marriage, you have never eaten. In fact, you stand against it. So much so that I was almost knocked out of my chair when you ordered it for brunch.
Yes, I had the open-faced meatloaf sandwich. And let me describe this for our podcast listeners, because
it was only like 12 feet high.
It is a treat to have. So it started off with a crusty piece of bread, I assume some type of multi-grain toast, mashed potatoes topped with white gravy. Next in line was a piece of meatloaf, a hearty piece of meatloaf.
It was at least an inch and a half
thick. With red peppers, green peppers, and a hint of bacon. And that was topped off by brown gravy.
Yep.
On top of the meatloaf on this cacophony of a sandwich was a over easy egg wrapped in a green onion.
A bell pepper,
and then topped off with a couple of onion rings.
Three heavily battered onion rings.
And a side of some of the best macaroni and cheese I've ever had.
Can we say cholesterol?
Cholesterol heaven. And I really enjoyed it. It was definitely an experience. And we're going to talk a little bit about our food trips here.
But hold on a second. I did have something quite unique myself.
Yes. What did you have?
I had something I had never heard of called a pancake pot pie. Now, this was quite interesting. It was actually layers of pancakes served in a pot pie bowl. And so it had a pancake on the bottom. The layer in between the pancake on the bottom and the two pancakes in the middle was one was a sausage gravy and the other one was a bacon gravy. And then there was a pancake, and then there was a pancake with another layer of potatoes, bacon, and sausage with gravy. And then the top pancake and at the very top of this was scrambled egg with cheese. So, you guys, when I eat a pancake, I'm typically a one pancake, maybe two pancake person. This was way too much food, number one. It was kind of messy, number two. But it was interestingly delicious. It was like you weren't sure you liked it, but you kept going back for more. That kind of situation.
Service was great, of course, braving the weather. Let's do something that we have never done on the podcast. We've never really done a daily travel type podcast before. So let's rate this place. Ellen's Southern Kitchen, I believe, is the name of it in Uptown of Dallas. I would say out of 10 stars, I'm going to go
10.
With 10 stars.
Not 5?
5 stars. I'm going or 10 stars. I am going to give it a solid 8.7.
Whoa. And it was meatloaf.
It was meatloaf.
Huh. What are you comparing your meatloaf to if you haven't eaten it since you were forced to as a kid?
I'm just the uniqueness, the flavors, all of that was definitely an experience. And of course, the service and the setting of the restaurant. It was a very nice place. Very
Relaxing
and welcoming. Yeah, I thought it was a great atmosphere.
An 8.7 for meatloaf, I think that gives me permission to make it at home. Yeah. Yeah, it does. He shook his head, you guys, but I think it gives me permission. Let us know in that comment section below if you think that Michelle now has permission to make meatloaf at home at least once a month for Dear Robert.
So what is your rating out of 10?
My rating out of 10... I'm going to go with a 4.8.
4.8. Why so low?
Not on the restaurant, on my dish. On the restaurant overall, if I wrapped it all together, including my wonderful caramel mocha coffee and the service, I would round them out right at a good solid 7.
Okay, so a 7 and an 8.7. If you've ever been to Ellen's, I assume it's not a chain, but if you've ever been there, give us a shout. Let us know what you think. So after breakfast, of course, we braved the rain again, and we headed over to REI, mainly just to do a little bit of window shopping. We bought a camp pillow that we can use in the car on our trip back. And on the plane, just something to have.
We were price comparison
because things are so much different in Alaska. Mainly, I was looking at their kayaks, open hull kayaks that we're thinking about getting.
And we were also looking at rack systems for the RAV4, which would be cheaper to buy down here, assemble, put on, install, and then ship the car ready made.
Yes, but the boat that we're looking at was the exact same price, $95. So not a cheaper price in Alaska, which is kind of surprising. So after REI, we headed over to Walmart.
Ugh.
And Walmart.
Why in the world? So you guys, we don't shop at Walmart at home. You guys need to know this before Robert dives into the Walmart experience.
It was a three-level Walmart with a Sam's Club on the bottom floor. Absolutely huge. Had to take escalators and elevators and the whole nine yards. Definitely a big city style Walmart. We went in to get a batch of quarters for the laundry and some laundry soap, and then a steno book for our notes for podcast movement, and got out of there as quick as we possibly could. Then we headed back to the hotel for our road warrior type activities, things that we typically do at hotels, whether it's in between conferences or music festivals or roller coasters or whatever. We always spend a couple of hours every day taking care of business. If you've listened to us for any amount of time, you know Michelle and I run three or four businesses, and that affords us the ability to do travel like this. So we spent a couple of hours doing that. Of course, we
always set aside 3 hours minimally to deal with the business at hand, manage our staff at home, and then we always make sure that we get in at minimum 60 minutes of exercise every day.
Yes, and of course, here at the Peloton, we would not be without...
Here at the Peloton.
Here at the Sheraton, we jumped on the Peloton bikes. We're recording this at 9 p.m.
Sheraton... Peloton.
Sheraton.
Hold
Peloton.
Up. Edit.
We're shooting off the cuff here, guys. So we rode the Peloton.
Did we have a drink at dinner? We haven't even gotten to dinner
at
yet.
At the Sheraton. And we did that. And of course, we finished up our laundry. When you're on the road for 3 hours, of course.
For 3 hours?
3 days. 3 weeks. For 3 weeks. So when you're on the road for 3 weeks, you have to do your laundry. Boy, we have all kinds of bloopers in this one. So we spent the afternoon doing work stuff, and then we headed off to dinner. And this is an experience in of itself. I mentioned at the top of the show that we like to do these little food side trips. And we started doing this, of course, when we moved to Alaska, because one of the important goals of every trip that we do is to find cool and unique places to eat. We try our best to not eat at any type of chain restaurants unless it's just a quick grab something as we're driving down the highway.
It's always a lunch if it is something like that. And it's typically at a workstation type place like Panera Bread.
Yep.
So when we choose dinner, you guys, and or brunch, because Robert really does hate breakfast, so we'll go to a brunch place at least once during the trip, we always make sure that we are definitely thinking outside the box, pushing our palates, even if our palates are being pushed towards meatloaf. And so I found this really cool little place.
Yes, you did. It was called Haywire Uptown, and we're going to talk about that in a second, but back to our foodie road trips. We do this because Alaska is so limited in their food choices. Pretty much everything to me tastes the same.
Well, it's all burgers.
And steaks
pizza.
And pizza. And the
burgers.
The typical American fare.
It's absolutely Americana, and if you're going to have anything in Alaska that is what you would think of as Alaskan, there's a couple of breweries in Anchorage that you can definitely get some pretty killer fish and chips with halibut. Some definitely high end places. You're going to get some decent salmon. One of my favorite places isn't even like an Alaskan flair. That Pangea is very good in Anchorage, but I digress. We are pretty locked in to our choices there.
Fun fact, the place in Alaska that is on everybody's list is called Moose's Tooth Pizza. It is the highest grossing pizza restaurant in the United States. Typically, it has a couple of hour wait, especially in the summer. They are known for their gourmet pizzas of all styles. They have the typical pepperoni and sausage, but they have some very unique flavors. Go check it out on the internet, Moose's Tooth Pizza in Anchorage. I'm trying to think, before we talk about the Haywire, what my favorite restaurant is, or actually the best restaurant is in Alaska that we've tried. Now, of course, we haven't tried many, many places, but there are very few to think about. I was thinking about that on our walk back from dinner. What is the best restaurant that you've been to in Anchorage?
So I enjoyed the few times we've been to Pangea, and I liked Orso.
Orso, that's a good place. It's, again, just Americana, a little bit upscale.
It's a little more upscale dinner, steak, fish.
My favorite place was the place we went to on New Year's Eve. I believe it's called Altura.
Oh, but Altura. But Altura is a very unique experience restaurant. It's not a...
go out to dinner on Friday.
Like a whim dinner night. It is definitely... I'm going for an experience.
Yep.
I would have to say, though, if we don't mention your ramen place.
The Rickshaw Ramen
is your favorite lunch place.
Is my favorite lunch place. And if you're in town, definitely check that out.
So now we've gone through Anchorage. We're not even there.
Let's talk about the Haywire. This is a place that Michelle found this afternoon. The place that we wanted to go to. The Pecan Lounge, I believe it was called.
Pecan Lodge.
Pecan Lodge was closed today. A lot of places were closed on Mondays, I guess because they're opened on the weekends. And remember, we're in the middle of downtown, so not a tourist-type area that would cater to everyday affairs. So we found the Haywire Uptown, and we wanted to walk just to see a little bit of Dallas. But first, we thought... hey, maybe we should jump on the light rail. And we put $12 into the machine to try to figure out.
Yeah, that was probably the most expensive light rail we've paid for.
Yep, we put $12 in the machine to jump on the light rail. And we jumped on thinking we were going the right way. And by the first stop, we realized that we were not headed towards the restaurant.
It was a good place to get off, wasn't it?
It was a great place to get off, tongue in cheek. So we jumped off, and then we ended up walking about 3/4 of a mile or so to the Haywire. Let's talk about this place. Very Texas-oriented type place, definitely upscale.
I would say it was... modern, yep. Texas. It wasn't like, oh my God, did I just walk into John Wayne's restaurant? No, it was very nicely put together. You did feel like you were in the right century, and it was a bit of a rustic, classy, if you will. Those words don't go together, but trust me, if you've been to a Haywire, you would get it. But yeah, I would say a rustic, classy bar.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a cool place. So Michelle started off with a cocktail. She had what they called a front porch swing, which was a vodka drink
It was a vodka drink, basically. It was made with grapefruit vodka, had pineapple juice, topped off with your regular flair, simple syrups and stuff, and then mint.
So sort of like a sidecar. What it was.
Exactly.
So after Michelle had her drink, I only had a lemonade.
Robert's been sober this entire trip, you guys.
Yes, I have not had too many cocktails.
I have not been sober.
So maybe it's time to partake in a cocktail or two. So after that, we had an appetizer, pork belly burnt ends. It was what they call a small plate, just one piece of pork belly. What did you think about that? What was on this plate of
So I compared this pork belly plate to the pork belly I got in Homer at the restaurant in Homer, Alaska. I can't remember. We were at that...
Land's End.
The Land's End. Yes. And at the Land's End in Homer, you guys, they have a wonderful pork belly entree. And this was similar in size and depth of flavor. And that one had a blueberry gastrique that was, wow, That was really good. So that pork belly dish that I had in Homer was at the top of my level of scoring. It was definitely a 10 out of 10. The atmosphere, the view, all of it was perfect for me. This one...
Don't rate yet.
I'm not going to rate yet. This one was right up there, you guys. Different flavor, mind you, which was great. It had a type of barbecue sauce, but it wasn't like, oh my God, that's barbecue sauce. Had the mustard seeds and Fresno chilies.
And pickled red onion.
Yeah, but the Fresno chilies were just sliced. And so they were not treated. So they were pretty dang on fire. So I scraped off my Fresno chilies on my portion. And Robert did not. He ate his Fresno chilies. And if you know Robert, then you know that spicy and Robert don't go well together. So that was interesting. But I liked it.
It was very tasty. Definitely had that Southwest flair to it that you would think about when you're thinking of Texas. Then we had smoked fried chicken for myself, and everything at this restaurant is locally sourced, and our server...
Yeah, that was part of the reason I chose it.
Yep, our server told us about everything being handmade and locally sourced and all of that, and the smoked fried chicken was very interesting. It was something that I had heard about before, but I've never had. Of course, we've made smoked chicken on our Big Green Egg, but we haven't done the fried part of it. I know that that is very popular to do with folks that have Big Green Eggs. And then Michelle had the roasted garlic stuffed filet with a side of Brussels sprouts and pecans. Describe
that. In a balsamic vinegar sauce.
Describe that a little bit.
It was very good. Robert doesn't care for Brussels sprouts. You didn't know you were eating Brussels sprouts in this dish. And you had tried the pecan nut, and you told me the flavors were quite interesting. It was very good. But it was also a very necessary item to the steak. The steak was rich and very tasty, but a little too much salt on the salt crust seasoning that came on it. It was just a little bit too salty, so the balsamic vinegar was a nice cut to that.
But the
And a perfectly cooked steak, I would add. I cut it with a butter knife.
But the highlight of the evening was the pecan pie with a cinnamon roll crust and a scoop of handmade vanilla bean ice cream.
Yeah, but hold on. This wasn't just an ordinary slice of pecan pie. This was a quarter slice, right?
Yep.
And it was also as thick as my thumb high. So what is that? An inch and a half high pie? So it was super thick. It was super big. We should not have ordered two, but sometimes you guys... Robert doesn't like to share his dessert, and he did not finish his chicken pieces. So he ate most of his pie, and he enjoyed it quite thoroughly. I did as well, and I'm not a huge pecan pie fan, but this was the best pecan pie either of us have ever had.
Yep, it was awesome, and I grew up eating pecan pie. My grandmother made pecan pie for
every...
Yeah,
you did say, whoa, she made this it for, is better than grandma's.
She made it for every holiday meal. I mean, we're talking Easter, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthday, whatever it was. She made a homemade pecan pie. So I ate a lot of pecan pie growing up, and I'm not a huge pie fan, but this by far was the best, for sure. Let's rate this place, the Haywire Uptown. 10 is the top again, and I'm going to let you go first.
Overall, atmosphere included, I definitely would give this restaurant a 9 overall. I mean, just overall, it was a great time.
I really enjoyed it, but I also enjoyed everything about Ellen's today. So I'm going to rate those guys almost exactly the same, that 8.7, 8.8. Just a nudge up for Haywire, mainly because of the pecan pie, but the Ellen's.
You should have had a drink.
But Ellen's because of the uniqueness of the flavors with the open-faced meatloaf. So we walked back along the
Arts
Pearl
District.
Arts District, yep. Which was cool to see. And then, of course, when we got back to the hotel, there you can definitely tell that they're busily setting up for Podcast Movement, which kicks off tomorrow. It's always interesting to see them set things up like this and how much goes into a huge conference like this. And when we say huge, we're thinking about several thousand people that attend. And here is a quick fun fact before we wrap up this show. There are, I believe, 2 million podcasts out there in existence. And, of course, many of those never make it past episode 6. So there are a lot of dead podcast episodes. But did you know that the average downloads for a podcast, remember, average is just as many more and just as many less, so average is dead center. The average podcast only has 161 downloads. This is a heck of a lot of work for a very small podcaster, which most people are. Of course, we do this pretty much for a living to promote all of our business and things. But would you come to a Podcast Movement, Michelle, if the average podcast is 161 downloads? So that's, if you do it every week, that's only about 5,000 to 7,000 downloads a year. So not very many. You're not going to get monetization. You probably aren't going to get sponsors. You probably aren't going to get dynamic ads. Dynamic ads is typically 20,000 downloads per show, per episode. You're probably not going to make a lot of money at it, but it's a hobby. And, of course, there's nothing wrong with going to conferences for a hobby. I mean, look at Comic-Con. Comic-Con sells out every year, and people are not doing that to up their game. Would you come to a place like this and invest the time, effort, money into something like this if you were such a newbie or small podcaster?
I would say yeah, because it's a perfect networking opportunity. It's a place to learn the craft so that you are able to utilize it to your best advantage. Now, utilizing it to your best advantage does not mean that you're a brand new podcast and you should be expecting yourself to become Joe Rogan next week. That's not the case. And if you have that as your reality button, then you can understand that you can utilize your podcast as a way to grow content for what it is that you're passionate about, right? So we learned 14 years ago about podcasts and how valuable they could be to our business for one very reason, the Yellow Book ads.
Yep, and we've talked a lot about that on our other show.
And I'm going to bring it up again because just because of the amount of money we saved in Yellow Book ads by switching to podcasting, albeit he has spent a dime or two, you guys, on new equipment. But every bit of money he has spent since that very first set of equipment, which was exactly what we were paying per month for our Yellow Page ads, every bit of equipment he's purchased since then over the years to upgrade, the podcast has paid for it itself.
Yes, thankfully we have reached those milestones and many more. Of course, we come to podcasts to learn the newest things. But just a little bit of pushback about networking. I know a lot of new podcasts listen to our podcasts. In particular, a friend of ours that's started a brand new podcast about a dog mushing event up in Saskatchewan. Very niche podcast. And my only advice to anybody that comes to an event like this, you had mentioned networking, as well as the Facebook page, which has probably 50,000 people on the Podcast Network Facebook page. I don't know if this is the best place to network because,
you think I'm talking about networking to get other podcasters to listen to my show.
Yep.
They don't give a crap about my shit. what I have to say because they're doing their own. I'm talking about networking with other podcasters so that if I have a question, maybe they know how to fix it.
Yep.
I'm talking about networking in the way that someone would for a business, from a business standpoint, instead of from a, oh my God, I'm going to Podcast Movement to get listeners. No, you're not. You're not going to Podcast Movement to get listeners. You're going to Podcast Movement to get like-minded colleagues that can help you figure out how to do it better.
And
that's what I mean by networking.
We've met a lot of people at Podcast Movement, people I still talk to at least once a week, sometimes more on social media, in particular on Twitter. I talk to those guys a lot, and we share tips, and some of them
are... Right, and you guys have to keep in mind, we've been doing this for 14 years. Don't let that scare you off. We're still considered a small podcast. We don't have a production company that does a lot of the behind the scenes for us. We don't have a research department. We don't have some super sexy co-hosts and things like that that come on and talk about our stuff. It's us.
Yep.
Every single bit of it.
So there you go, guys. The next 4 days we'll be at Podcast Movement in our episodes.
Babe, you were supposed to say I am the super sexy co-host.
So the 4 days will be geared around what we're learning, and we hope to share some of those tips here. I know that a lot of you guys that are listening are thinking, wait a second, this is supposed to be rock music and roller coasters. But remember, this is a little bit of an offshoot. This is our travel side or our road trip side of our brand, if you will.
And stay tuned, you guys. I promise we're going to be talking about some rock and roll sooner or later.
Yep. Next week, 2 concerts, big time events, Alice in Chains, one of my favorite bands of all time. 30 years ago, I believe just this month, probably the 10 out of 10 of all early 90s era heavy metal, psychedelic metal, grunge, whatever you want to call it. Alice in Chains' Dirt was released 30 years ago this month. And that's a pretty big deal. And Jerry and the guys are going to be playing a lot of Dirt at this show. And I remember listening real quick, Michelle, quick side.
See, I told you guys.
I remember listening.
I told you guys we would get some rocking.
It took 31 minutes to get to the music. I remember listening to Sirius Satellite Radio a couple of months ago. And one of the DJs came on and said, do you remember when Alice in Chains' Facelift came out? Probably most of us' introduction to Alice in Chains and grunge, the grunge sound, if you will, that really took the world by storm with Man in the Box and all of that, of course, the video hit that it was. And then he said, do you remember when you popped in the CD, the second CD of Alice in Chains, which was Dirt, and that first chord ripped, and it really just blew everybody away. So, for all of our...
So, where were you when you first heard it?
Well, it was 1992, so I guess I was in Portland, Oregon. I probably had my own flannel shirt on and torn up jeans and nappy hair, thinking we were going to be the next Alice in Chains or Nirvana. I was probably driving in my car the first time, truck, car, whatever I had in 1992. Probably driving down the road when I popped that CD in. And I was blown away. And we're going to do a little bit of a preview of Dirt and some of the tracks that lead up to that on our Facebook page. So check out rockandcoasters.com. But if you don't believe me, put the album Dirt into iTunes or Spotify or whatever and hit play to that first track. Do not shuffle that first track. I'm not even going to tell you what it is because you'll know exactly the chord that I'm talking about, and you will know why Alice in Chains really took over the world. Michelle, very quickly, a little teaser from you. What do you think about the Alice in Chains show coming up a week and a couple of days from now?
I'm excited about it. I always am. I am excited to see them in their stompy grounds. We've only ever seen them in Seattle one other time. It wasn't that much of an intimate show. This one's supposed to be a little bit more intimate. So
that was when they opened for Guns N' Roses, of all people. The hair band of all hair bands back in the day.
Sure. Yeah. So we're looking forward to it. So like I said, you guys, we will keep your interest going if you are rock fans. We love to hear your comments in our socials. Let us know. And Robert, I think I'm going to take us all the way out. Thanks for listening on day four.
Five
of our rock and roller tour across America. This is Robert and Michelle for Rockin' Coasters Podcast and First Paw Media. Take care.